Hello and welcome to Long Delayed Echoes, a program for ham radio enthusiasts. This happens to be podcast number 40, and I'm glad to have you along for the ride. You know, in the world of amateur radio, perhaps no single activity is as revered as is DXing. Much of its aura no doubt proceeds from the early days when the world was still very large, and international travel was only afforded to a select few. That HF radio could vanquish the lonely distances made contacting faraway places very special. As radio hams took their gear along and operated from exotic locales, the D-Expedition was born. Now, as a quick primer for those who may not know it, in the DX world, a rare country doesn't have to be some far-flung location. It can be any entity where there are few or perhaps no radio amateurs. Without a ham operator, no one can confirm a contact with that location. So in the eyes of rabid DXers, a location like that becomes very rare. These days, groups of hams often mount a D-Expedition to one of those places, taking along an entire team of operators who work night and day, putting thousands of contacts in their logs, and thus making the rare location a little less rare. Most of the big D-Expeditions you read about in CQ and QST magazines these days are enormously large in scope and can include chartering ships and helicopters to ferry equipment and operators to these sometimes hard-to-get-to locations. But this wasn't so 50 years ago, and it isn't always true today. DXers know well names like Danny Wheel, Iris and Lloyd Colvin, and Don Miller, and these were but a very few of the hams who traveled around the world with a radio in tow, handing out contacts from rare locations in a pretty simple fashion. In this edition of LDE, I'd like to read you the tale of Ted Henry, W6UOU, and his wife Meredith, W6WNE, and their little D-Expedition to American Samoa in 1957. It sounds like a wonderful time, and I'm sure that it was. Sit back now, close your eyes, and for a few minutes pretend that it's you visiting a tropical island in the South Pacific, and it's you handing out contacts to the deserving. If you listen carefully, you might hear the ocean surf or the clinking of ice in your glass of rum and coke. This article was written by Ted, and it appeared in the January 1958 edition of QST Magazine. Now, at the conclusion of the article, I'll tell you a little more about W6UOU, just in case that call isn't familiar to you. So be sure to stick around to the very end.
You're listening to Long Delayed Echoes, a ham radio podcast from KE9V.net.
From Samara to Samoa, D-Expedition to the South Pacific by Ted Henry, W6UOU, from QST Magazine, January 1958. Our home station is on Samara Road, high on the Santa Monica Mountains, overlooking Los Angeles, Santa Monica, and the Pacific Ocean. From there to Pago Pago, American Samoa, and back again is a long, long way. About 60 hours actual flying time, or to put it another way, about halfway around the world. I suppose the dream of operating from a distant, exotic location lurks in the minds of most hams, and we made this dream come true. Samoa is without question one of the most remote and primitive of all American possessions. In this respect, it suited our purpose to perfection. It was our aim to dramatize in the most effective manner possible the great advances of the last 10 years in the science of voice communication. To do this, we proposed to fly to the most remote spot we could find, carrying our transmitter and receiver with us in a single suitcase. It seemed to us then, and in retrospect it seems even more forcibly true, that this ability of modern man to carry his worldwide voice with him, easily and inconspicuously, is a concept to fire the imagination of all men everywhere. As we all know, of course, amateurs have made unique contributions to this modern miracle of communications. To achieve our purpose, we chose the newly announced Collins KWM-1 single sideband transceiver. The equipment satisfied our requirement for portability and, as subsequent events proved, it easily provided worldwide communication. On August 4th, with a great deal of planning and preparation behind us, my wife Meredith and I, along with four suitcases, took off by PAA on what we hoped would constitute the new look in D-Expeditions. Some 5,000 miles later, we were in Fiji. Through the good offices of Greg, VR2BC, we had received official permission to operate our station under his call. Jack Regan, VR2AZ, who works for the New Zealand CAA at NADI, kindly invited us into his home to use his antenna. The 15-meter band opens to the States at about 3 p.m. Fiji time, so Greg took us on a wild and bumpy ride through the town of NADI and the adjacent countryside. When Meredith begged him to stop so she could take movies of the natives and their villages, he replied by speeding up and shouting over his shoulder that she could tell all future audiences that she had the hiccups when she was taking these shots. As a result of Greg's wild driving, we were back home by 2:30 p.m. and ready to go on the air. We fired up immediately on 15-meter sideband, contacting W1AUR, W4MXI, W6ONP, KH6AR, and W6HS stroke Maritime Mobile, who was aboard the USS Monterey, for the first five QSOs. From that moment until 20 meters folded up at about 10 o'clock at night, we kept the rig going continuously, making 146 QSOs on both 15 and 20 meters. We were ably assisted in the effort by Trev Grantham, VR2BA. At midnight in the Fiji Mokambo Hotel, as we struggled to get all the bits and pieces of radio gear properly packed back into the suitcase, we knew for sure that we were on a de-expedition. The following morning, Thursday, August 8th, our PAA DC-4 jet left NADI at 7 a.m. for the last five-hour leg of our trip to Tofuna Airport on American Samoa. It was a brilliant, sparkling day, ideal for a flight above the South Pacific. Dozens of tropical islands were visible eastward through the Fiji group, and one bright-hued coral reef followed another. A truly remarkable flight, which was noted not only for its great beauty, but one which gave us the unusual opportunity to view the remote and legendary Tin Can Island. This island is so far removed from the regular traffic routes that not even the plane crew had seen it before. We arrived at Tofuna Airport exactly on schedule and were more than slightly startled to see what appeared to be a major part of the entire native population assembled at the airport, which is located some 7 miles from the village of Pago Pago. It was quickly explained to us that such a gathering was quite routine. The plane arrives only some 8 times per year, so its arrival is a gala occasion. A wild taxi ride deposited us at the Rainmaker Hotel just outside of Pago Pago, and a few sketchy explanations of the purpose of our trip quickly secured the necessary permission from Mary Pritchard, the hotel manager, so that we were able to put W6UOU/KS6 on the air immediately, right from the screen porch outside of our hotel room. We had not definitely planned that we would be able to get on the air on the afternoon of our arrival. We had, however, made tentative schedules on the assumption that it might be possible. So, flushed with the excitement of arrival, we quickly strung a half-wave dipole under the overhanging eaves of the corrugated tin roof of the hotel. At no point was the antenna more than 10 feet off the ground, and it paralleled along its entire length within just 3 feet of the porch screen. We hoped against hope that it would at least permit us to hear and to be heard, no matter how faintly. The final wire was connected just minutes before schedule time, which was 0300 GMT or 5 p.m. Samoan time. Well, wonder of wonders, and for the thrill of a lifetime, the first station we heard and contacted, exactly on schedule to the minute, was our own station W6UOU in Los Angeles. After that contact, bedlam broke out. One moment the band was quiet and relatively uncongested. The next moment it was alive with a totally unbelievable number of stations all calling one station, and that station was ours. The sensation is impossible to describe. It can only be experienced. But take my word, it is at the same moment both frightening and exhilarating. No other experience in ham radio has quite duplicated for me that first flush of excitement which came with the realization that the months of planning, the weeks of preparation, the days of flying, and the last hours of anxious waiting had been successfully culminated in this moment. In quick succession, our first contacts were W6UOU, W6UPP, K6DDO, W6OZO, K6KJV, and W6ZRZ. During the first day's operations from 4 p.m. to midnight, 176 contacts were made on 15 and 20 meters single sideband and CW. The first contacts in each particular call area and country on that first day were W1BCR, K2GFQ, W3JNN, W4THZ, W5LHP, W6UPP, W7KVU, W8BKP, W9WHM, and W0ARA. Now these were supplemented by ZL1BY, VK3AEE, KH6BCX, VE3RE, CN8MM, GM3CIX, and HS1A for the first contacts with their countries. It should be stated here and now, however, that from our point of view, a de-expedition is no fit opportunity for working foreign countries. With hundreds of W stations calling all the time, the foreign contacts had to be sandwiched in during the few minutes that could be begged off from the W's. During our 14 days on the island, we completed 1,300 two-way contacts with 44 states and 53 countries. Our every waking moment was dominated by radio. One of the really unexpected bonuses of the trip was our ability to be of service to those residents of the island who had received us with hospitality and kindness. We discovered that there are no commercial voice circuits operating from Samoa to the States. To the great astonishment of all, we offered to furnish phone patch service to friends and relatives back in the States. As a result, not one day passed during our visit that we did not run numerous patches. Most calls were to parents, children, or friends whose voices had not been heard in years. Many tears of joy were shed and excitement was unbounded. Ham radio in general, and W6UOU in particular, made many new friends during those days in Samoa. With sightseeing, souvenir hunting, dinner invitations, DXing, and phone patching, our 2 weeks were gone almost in a flash and we were retracing our way back to the States. A four-day stopover in Fiji was characterized by the hospitality we had come to expect from the VR2 gang, and in particular that of Greg, VR2BC, and his charming wife Yolanda. Another four-day stopover in Honolulu produced additional unexpected trip bonuses. A full day spent with Jim Orick, KH6AQ, introduced us to the unsuspected wonder of the Iwa Sugar Plantation and Mill. And a specially called dinner meeting of the Honolulu sideband group gave us the opportunity to meet several of the local hams. Finally, exactly 4 weeks to the day from our departure, we were back home in Los Angeles. It was a perfect trip under ideal conditions, providing just about every satisfaction that amateur radio is capable of affording. No doubt there will be other trips for us in the future, but none could ever quite live up to this first dream de-expedition.
As Hurricane Katrina threatened our Gulf Coast, ham radio was on the air, saving lives. As Katrina's winds raged, ham radio got the message through. As Katrina's waters surged, ham radio worked when other communications failed. And ham radio is working now, helping rescuers, comforting victims, uniting communities. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio, at 800-326-3942 or visit ARRL.org.
Just in case the name Ted Henry and W6UOU don't ring a bell with you, Ted's older brother Bob is W0ARA, and he had opened Henry Radio in Butler, Missouri in 1927. When Ted expressed an interest in also opening a radio store, but in the Los Angeles area, Henry Radio West was born. But that was in 1941, and the new store hadn't been open long when the United States was plunged into World War II and ham radio was shut down. Ted quickly realigned the business to supply the government with much-needed radios and soon became a major supplier of crystals for the venerable BC-610, a workhorse transmitter of World War II. He maintained three manufacturing facilities and managed to survive the ham radio shutdown, although Ted was quick to point out that the government's process of recalculation prevented wartime suppliers from collecting excessive profits. After the war, he went on to expand the Los Angeles storefront and enjoyed many years in the amateur radio retail business. Ted and his wife Meredith were avid DXers, and they enjoyed several such de-expeditions as the one you just heard. Well, that's it for another edition of Long Delayed Echoes. I've posted a few links about W6UOU, including a link to an image of his 1957 U.S. Samoa QSL card, on the website. Feel free to stop by and look for LDE Podcast number 40, and you'll find these web links, and I happen to think they're well worth a look. I've also recently created a new page on the website. It's called How to Listen, and it explains how you can receive this program as a podcast. So if you need some additional information on subscribing, please look for that under the menu categories on the website. You can find previous editions of LDE under the podcast menu category there as well. That web address, by the way, is ke9v.net. Now, I'd love to hear from you and find out what you think about these programs. Feel free to leave your comments on the weblog, or if you prefer, you can send me email. My address is ke9v@arrl.net. So until next time, I'll pass along my very best wishes to you for good health, good times, and good DX. 73. This is KE9V. That's Kilo Echo 9 Victor, podcasting from Muncie, Indiana in the United States, and I'm now clear and QRT.